Hello, fellow humans. Welcome to Uncharted Living. We are your hosts, Christine, Rebecca, and Ty. We are business owners, corporate leaders, and life coaches. Join us each week for authentic, thought-provoking, and entertaining conversations. We'll discuss a variety of topics, from personal wellness and professional growth to creativity and spirituality, all designed to help you create your own map for your life. We are excited to partner with you on your uncharted journey. Uncharted living, it's just the beginning. Don't be afraid to get life started. Jump off the map and live uncharted. Hello, fellow humans. Welcome to another episode of Uncharted Living. I am one of your hosts, Christine, and I am joined here with Ty. And
Hi.
We are so excited to welcome Megan Carl to the podcast. So let's get started. Megan Carl worked at Nike for over 30 years, rising up the ranks to eventually become head of North American basketball. Megan's career rose steadily at Nike, where she drove businesses featuring superstars like Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant. She was elevated multiple times to roles no woman had ever held, including stints leading international teams in London and Amsterdam. Megan left shortly after attaining her dream job due to a toxic workplace culture that allowed and left unpunished workplace bullying. She founded Carl Consulting LLC, where she gives workshops on handling workplace bullying and creating an inclusive culture of connection and trust. In her new book, Walk Away to Win, a playbook to combat workplace bullying, Carl tells her own story and those of other real men and women she interviewed for the book. But more importantly, she pulls back the curtain to offer a clear description of what workplace bullying is, what it might look like, what targets can and should do to try to combat their bullies, and how colleagues and mentors can help when they see someone at work being treated in this terrible fashion. Thank you so much for joining us today, Megan.
Thank you. Thanks, Christine. Thanks, Ty. Wonderful to be here.
Thanks, Megan. So, Megan, your book starts with a manifesto, and it seems like a great place for us to introduce our listeners to you and your book. Can you tell us a little bit more about the manifesto in the beginning of the book?
Yes. The manifesto was born out of an interview that I was doing with one of the people who had experienced workplace bullying, and finished the interview. The Zoom is off, and I just had this overwhelming feeling of sadness that we, those of us who have experienced workplace bullying, we don't know how to talk about it. We don't even know what it is. It's such a broad stroke, a pattern of health-harming mistreatment. It can look like these things: sabotage, manipulation, exclusion, etc. And so I kind of turned back to my laptop, and I sort of barfed out, "Let me pray," which is the bully's manifesto. And so I'll just grab a bit from it.
Great.
I believe in the magic of demeaning, devaluing, and dehumanizing. I believe in screaming, a smack on the ass, and a creepy whisper. I believe in scare tactics, paralyzing humiliation, and shock value. I believe in manipulation, exploitation, and Machiavelli. In short, I believe empathy and vulnerability are for losers. I jerk you around. I yank your chain. I reschedule the meeting over and over. I care more about the order of your PowerPoint slides than the message you're delivering. I get others to talk behind your back, so you'll start to feel the target on your back. Deceit is my face paint. I believe bullying is a professional sport. I believe bullying is therapy. I believe bullying is a noble means to a me end. I believe your pain is my gain. I believe in threatening and rethreatening, but always under the cover of darkness. Remember, leave no trace. I believe in the hunt. I am a workplace bully. So bow your head and let me pray. And so that, for me, this sort of predatory and thrill-seeking that bullies really have, was really important for me to highlight right at the front of the book. I wanted to just ground people in, we are not talking about an abrasive boss who had a bad piece of pizza. We're talking about predatory behavior in those who want to do others harm in the workplace.
I got complete chills listening to that, even though I don't have anything to relate to in my life. It's just, that's, I love the way you picked to do the manifesto. And I'm also super curious, Megan, when you left your bullying situation, how did you, you mentioned that you wrote this after you interviewed somebody. How did you find people to interview? And how many people? I'd love to hear more about that.
You know, when I left, I started writing immediately, but I was really stuck in the ending, how things ended and my rock bottom. And so I sort of wrote that to get it, quickly, just to get it out of me. Because I knew that was pretty stuck. And then what I started doing, I put that away. And then what I started doing is I started studying and exploring and finding people who were experts in this thing that I was realizing I had experienced, which is called workplace bullying. I really didn't know while I was experiencing workplace bullying what exactly it was. I didn't know how to recognize it. I didn't understand it. I did not have response options. I did not know how to navigate it. And so I felt like, and I thought I was alone. I sort of come out the other side of it. And I start to explore. I found the Workplace Bullying Institute pretty quickly. And they are, you know, they were founded in 1997 by Drs. Ruth and Gary Namy. And they're an incredible resource. And so I started studying their stats and their research and watched a gazillion YouTube videos and read and listened to podcasts and just tried to learn. And then I started to post things mostly on LinkedIn. And what I discovered is that people wanted to talk. And so then we'd sort of set up, let's have a Zoom. Let's interact. Let's connect on this subject that we felt so isolated in. And then you start to realize, oh, there's a whole bunch of us. And it's helpful to talk about it. And so that's kind of how people came to me. There might be people that I knew that I'd reach out to and say, did you have an experience like this? And some of them might say, yes, I did. And I like to talk to you. Yes, I did. And I don't want to talk about it. No, I didn't, but I know somebody who did. And that's kind of how I found these people and how they found me.
And were you surprised by how many people you found?
I was, because, you know, bullying is such a shame-filled experience, because for some reason, those of us who have experienced it think we've actually caused it. And so there's this, you know, sort of veil of secrecy around it. I love this one story of a friend of mine who reached out after I had left Nike, and she wanted to have a coffee. And she said, I knew something was happening to you. And I didn't really know this person very well at work. She said, I knew something was happening to you. And I about choked on I remember feeling like, where is this going? And she said, I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I knew something was happening to you at work. And I said, how did you know that? And she said, because you were always this big personality with all this energy, and you were so, you'd enter a room and it was just, you know, us and everyone and inclusive and, you know, energetic. And she said, and then I just saw you get smaller and smaller and smaller. And, and she said, I wish I had reached out to you. Maybe I could have helped. And I was really moved. And I've shared that story several times, and I'm always moved by that story.
Yeah,
because it meant, first of all, it meant the world to me that she did see me. And it also meant the world to me that even though I wasn't there anymore, she still thought it was important enough to tell me, I saw you. I knew there was something. I want you to know I care about you. It really meant, it meant the world to me.
The effect of what you were going through in the manifesto was really helpful, Megan, in kind of just saying some of the specifics of what workplace bullying can look like. And I do want to just note for our listeners that when it said, let me pray, it's P-R-E-Y, P-R-A-Y. Let me pray as a predator. But that the effects of bullying are in a way very similar to the effects, some of the effects of sexual harassment. You get smaller, you can be smaller, you can be quieter, you can be fearful, you can have shame. And I think sadly, our culture has had to get better at talking about and recognizing what sexual harassment is in the workplace. And certainly the Me Too movement helped with that and to make people feel like they're less alone. So my question is, I guess, multi-part. One, what is the difference, I think, between bullying, sexual harassment, just having workplace friction, toxic, just kind of, if you could sort of peel away some of the different things. And then also, do you feel like we'll be having a Me Too movement with respect to bullying, which I think companies would be very well to be aware of and try to prevent?
Yeah, I'll try to kind of take this in chunks. I think there's a couple things in that question. One is, you know, common behavior of toxic workplace culture, toxic organizations are, you know, yelling, manipulation, disrespect, diminishing, workplace bullying. So the culture, the environment is toxic. So within that, you have these behaviors that really thrive, you know, like, it's like a petri dish for just misbehavior. And then, you know, workplace bullying, as I said up front, I draft off of the Workplace Bullying Institute. I really lock into their definition, which is this repeated pattern of health harming mistreatment. It can take the form of intimidation, humiliation, work sabotage, exclusion. Lynn Curry, who's an author, actually says workplace bullying is psychological violence. And so she really takes it into she kind of doubles down on that. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission defines sexual harassment as anything having a sexual or physical consequence. And it is illegal in the workplace. So bullying can happen without that sort of physical or sexual component to it. If bullying has a physical or sexual component to it, a violent component to it, that is an immediate get yourself to HR, speak in that language. Isn't this considered sexual harassment? Let the record show that you as an employee have stated that. It doesn't mean that every company is going to respond to that, but that is illegal in the workplace. Workplace bullying is not illegal. Some companies see it as a means to driving revenue. internal competition. You know, my group is better than yours, et cetera. And so that dynamic can drive incredible results. And so there are cultures in, you know, companies, organizations, professional associations, teams that really drive that type of culture. I do hope that Walk Away to Win, when I wrote Walk Away to Win, and even with that title, I felt like this is a call to action. This is something that I want to, I want people to rally around. I think the greatest movements are those that people organically rally around, and we start to see hashtag WATW. So, you know, that is my hope, because the whole reason for writing the book was to ignite a conversation around a topic that affects 80 million U.S. workers, which the math comes out to 1 in 2 that are affected by workplace bullying. 1 in 3 report workplace bullying. So you've got this pervasive issue. It is, it's not endemic to one company. It's an epidemic. And so my hope was to really start discussing this thing that actually is known as the undiscussable.
And I'm interested, you said if it has a physical situation to talk to HR, what kind of language would you give our listeners to talk to HR about bullying that doesn't have that element of for sure sexual physical harassment?
Yes, I would say, document what is happening so that you yourself, as the person who thinks they are experiencing bullying, you can then track, is this a pattern? Am I seeing a repeated pattern here? Or is this a one-off with an abrasive boss who is challenging me in a way that feels slightly more abrasive than I am used to. It's sort of like, what is the difference? One is a pattern, a consistent pattern of health harming mistreatment. So it's really important for somebody to start to document that. The tough thing is when you are, you know, the target, you are so in it that it is really hard to even understand which way is up. It's like the Stranger Things upside down world. You're you don't even know, you know, where's Winona Ryder? I mean, it's like, what is happening here? And so, one is try to document it for yourself. Find your allies. So if you have been bullied in public by an overt bully, there's yelling, there's aggressiveness coming at you in a public setting, there are people who witness that then. Find a couple of those who you trust and say, I noticed when this happened, I know I personally felt uncomfortable. How did you feel? I felt uncomfortable as well. And in fact, I documented it and I'm going to go talk to HR. Or I felt uncomfortable as well. I documented it. I don't know what to do with it though. Do you want to go to HR together? Or I didn't think anything was wrong with that. That's that's just him being him. Then you know, okay, that's not my ally. And then the other thing, just to kind of pull this all the way through, that language that you use with HR is still that strong harassment language, because you want to get their attention. You know, I am being mistreated at work. This is, I would consider this health harming mistreatment. It's showing up in these ways. Isn't that something that you're required to do something about? Also, look at your handbook. Is there, even if it isn't illegal, your company should have in their handbook that they there's a zero tolerance for workplace bullying. So look at it and take that with you.
Would you, did you write, I'm curious, Did you write this book for the bullied, the bullies, or the HR, or all of them?
I wrote it for for everybody because it's about igniting a conversation. And to do that, we need all of those parties involved and included. Those who are doing the bullying, you know, it's sort of like if women are only talking about sexism and scarcity with other women, it it just validates what our experience is. But isn't it so helpful to get at those subjects in a more systemic way with a diverse participatory group that can actually affect that, you know, in a bigger way? So I feel the same way about workplace bullying. Isn't it so important to have everyone from CEOs on down the line, HR professionals, the bullies themselves? Wouldn't that be interesting if the bully is in a conversation about workplace bullying and suddenly realizes I might be a workplace bully? So really, to answer your question, it's for everyone. And I think the final, you know, pages of the book, I do address each of the audiences that I hope are gaining something from the book and that I hope are part of the discussion.
Yeah. Well, when we think of bullies, we tend to think of TV and movie bullies, right? And for our Gen Xers, Biff from Back to the Future or Buzz from Home Alone. For our millennials, Regina George from Mean Girls or Miranda Priestly from Devil Wears Prada. And for our Gen Zers, any bad guys from the Marvel Universe or the Karate Kid remake. Megan, how can bullying show up more insidiously than so overtly? And also, you know, you talked about, you know, women talking to other women, but women can certainly be bullies as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I had to simplify it when I started to, when I decided I'm going to write about this. And you've got just like, I mean, it's all these things. It's, I don't even know how to put my head around it. And so I broke it down to being, it can be public or private, and it can be overt or covert. And so that public, overt bully is that I want witnesses, I am yelling, I am banging a table. We all can see that bully. That bully is coming at you. That public covert bully is they're sly, you know, they're subtle. I'm gonna trip you up, and it could be that just you and the bully know what is happening. But I might, you know, that bully might, they might change a meeting location without telling you. I thought I told you. They know they didn't tell you. They might somehow disrupt you in a presentation. They could always make sure their ringer's on. They could make sure their ringer is set to something really obnoxious, like a barking dog. I just want to see if I can trip you up a little bit. So they're just covert, but they're public. They might get your name wrong over and over and over again. It's public, it's covert. Does he know my name? And then that private overt is the two-face. And that is, I am first team all Christine in public. In one-on-one, I am disrespectful. I am demeaning you. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you, Christine. Shut it. You're not all that. Right? So that's that private overt. And then the private covert is that about face, which is that passive aggressive. I don't know. I, I would have told you if I knew that the meeting changed, or, you know, I didn't know that that person made twice your salary. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow.
It's just this, like, you're trying to get a rise out of me. You're doing it consistently. It is not helpful. And then we've got the pièce de résistance, the gaslighter. Mm-hmm. And the gaslighter, their purpose is, I want to make you feel like you're losing your mind. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell you that. Or I did tell you the meeting moved. I told you that.
Right.
No, you didn't. So the really gnarly thing is that these bullies jump from all, you know, across quadrants, and they, you know, even on one given day, that one bully can jump in, you know, from an overt public to a, you know, covert private. So you're just always back on your heels.
It's exhausting. I mean, we have our two things I wanted to ask. I guess I'm going to just combine them in one, is that, you know, I think a lot of people think, well, maybe I'm just being, am I just being too sensitive? Wait, is this really happening? So with the gaslighting, I feel like it's altering your sense of reality, but it's also making you think, well, maybe I'm just too sensitive. Maybe I'm reading into this. And I think the flip side of that also is, you actually even say it in the book, which I thought was so, so interesting, is you say there's such a thing as too much gratitude. And we practice gratitude in this space. We encourage our listeners to practice gratitude, but you say there is a thing as too much gratitude. So how do we make sure we don't over-gratitude ourselves into staying in a bad situation and say, well, listen, I have my dream job. I made it to the top. Okay, what's a little passive aggressive craziness, or what's a barking dog phone ringer in every single meeting? Or, okay, sure, my boss canceled 7 meetings in a row, but I'm in my dream job. I should be grateful. What do you tell listeners who might be in a similar situation like that?
Well, I think you have to, we each as individuals have to determine what our own value system is and how that aligns with the place that we spend most of our time, which is the workplace. Mm-hmm. And so if those things are out of alignment, it is a very uncomfortable place to be in. And only each of us as individuals know what that means. You know, what is your rock bottom? You know, is it that is it okay that you don't sleep anymore, that you have migraines, or you're losing your hair, or you have PTSD, or you hallucinate? You know, what is okay to you? What, you know, and not only that, what is your standard for the workplace? And what happens when we experience workplace bullying, all those things you just described, we keep lowering our standards. Oh, I guess, I guess that's okay. You know, I opened my book with not being introduced to a new team. That happened. And I am from a family in which introductions and thank you notes and everything in between of, you know, being kind to each other, it was part of my upbringing. And I immediately jumped to, I guess there's a lot going on here. Yeah. You know, that's kind of weird. And so what happens is, and I'm so grateful to be in this job. Mm. And so not only does the bully sort of catch an edge with us, our gratitude starts to blur our own expectations and value system. But this, you know, God, this is so cool. I was raised by a basketball coach. I'm now in basketball. And multiple examples of those I interviewed, you know, but the work was so great. It was fast paced. I was doing such interesting things. I'm making good money, all the things. And yet I'm getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And my values are getting blurrier and blurrier and blurrier. I no longer even know who I am, but I'm so damn grateful to be here.
Wow. Yeah.
It's so off. But when you're in it, it is mm-hmm. so hard to recognize that. And even those in your family or your friend group that are seeing it, you don't want to hear it. There has to be mm-hmm. something in you as a target that finally gets you to say, okay, enough. And for me, that was an annual physical. And that was a, mm-hmm. you know, right doctor, right time, right planetary alignment, right energy, all of that in which she asked the right questions and I was finally ready to talk. And I realized as I was telling her, you know, I don't sleep anymore because I have hallucinations. I thought a man was going to break into my hotel room and kill me. You know, I can't get away from my family fast enough. I can't get into, you know, a dark space quick enough. And when I saw her face turn from kind of this concern to this absolute, you know, concern double down, just like, I realized, you know, you're telling your doctor, if I'm walking by Ty, we work at the same place and I'm walking by her, I might know, Ty might be my best friend. I might not know Ty. Ty might be a colleague. And I'm walking towards her. I might not know. I wouldn't know if Ty could see me because I had such dissociation. I was still outside my body due to my whole nervous system absolutely collapsing that I didn't even know what was real. Paranoia, all of it. So for me, that was the gift. That moment with the doctor and the doctor saying, you know, you need to make a change. And so,
I mean, I think you started.
Really the question.
Yeah. I mean, you started with the definition of it being health harming.
Yes.
So I think if people want to really, and our listeners want to think about how their relationship is at work, and really a lot of what you're saying can extend to interpersonal relationships. I mean, a lot of what you're describing sounds like an abusive relationship, which could be in all sorts of different kinds of, you know, partnerships, romantic, friendship, otherwise. But that if you really check in, and this is where I'm channeling Becca, who unfortunately isn't here, but I know she would ask this question. You know, we talk a lot about your body, and your body knows what's up, and your body can be trusted. And so I think for our listeners, maybe check in with your body. Is your body having physical reactions to when you think about work? Are you right? You said headaches, stress, nausea, all of that. And then your emotional health. So if it's harmed in any way related to work, then that's, my guess is that would be a sign. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so start talking about it. Those people who are listening that go, oh my God, I no longer move my body. I don't hydrate my body. I don't rest my body. I do not connect to anybody. I am isolated. I might turn to alcohol. I might turn to drugs. I might turn to sex. I might turn to, you know, whatever it is that is your thing. You know, that's a moment. That's a pause. And talk to somebody. You know, after my appointment, it took me 3 days to talk to my husband about it because I was so saddened that I had put my family at risk for my job.
Yeah.
And that's what it came down to. But I was not clear on making that connection between what was physically and psychologically happening and what was going on in my workplace. I had not made that connection. So out of everything that we just talked about, I hope that people who are in that situation understand and start to make that connection.
So good.
So Megan, with all of the things we just said about connecting our listeners to their body as the bull lead, what can we say to our other listeners who may be on the other side of that, who might be wondering, am I a bully or adjacent, bully adjacent as a leader, as a team leader or a vice president in their corporation?
Well, I think, you know, are you somebody who in the workplace are experiencing inexplicable turnover in your area? Mm. Do people, are people want to leave your function and your management and will not really give a reason? Do you instill fear? Is there a climate of fear in your organization? Are you the only one who talks in meetings? You know, how are problems solved? Are they solved by you and, you know, with zero collaboration? Or do you, have you created a culture in which people feel safe and valued to actually share opinions, take risks, make great decisions, have even bigger, better success? Or do you have a culture of divisiveness? You know, are those who report to you frozen because it's you, because you are the one speaking, it is, you know, it's your way. So I think those are kind of some of the ways. For me, it's like, whose voice are we hearing? Is it always yours as the bully? Are you the autocratic ruler that knows all? So everybody else just listen and do as I say, and we'll get along just fine. Or have you created a culture of trust so that everybody feels like they can contribute?
Is that what part of your work is at Carl Consulting currently? Do you work with upper level management about being aware of the things you just said?
I do. And I hope to do a whole lot more. Really, the idea was get the product out, which is this book, start to have these kinds of conversations, create some momentum against this. But really, it is about, you know, helping organizations with an awareness of what is going on. Let's put facts on the table. Okay. It is happening in your organization with half of the U.S. Working population being affected. It is happening. Create a vision against that. So what do we want for our organization? Put a strategy that supports that vision. Discuss what obstacles we might run into. Land some really relevant values. And then have the courage to discuss it. And to discuss it honestly. So that's what my hope is for leaders. And that's how I approach leaders of organizations. Those are sort of the boxes we're going to check. And if we start with, well, bullying doesn't happen here. We got a long ways to go then.
Yeah. Well, for people who are interviewing at companies, you have a chapter in your book on workplace culture, and it's got great questions for someone who might be interviewing at a new company. What should someone be looking for in a new place of employment that might give clues as to whether or not bullying is culturally acceptable there or not? So, you know, and maybe especially if you've left a bad place and you're wanting to interview at a new place, what can workers be looking for, or potential employees be looking for?
I almost sort of go to this, like, what is the health of the organization? If you had to describe the health of your organization, what words would you use?
That's a good one.
So that just that it's the same that, you know, we go for an annual physical, we get words from our doctor, you know, these things describe your health. What's the health of this organization? Is the vision of the organization, is it internally focused on a revenue, on profit, or is it externally serving in some way? And how that brand or company or association, professional group, how that how that shows up to the world, is it the same as how employees are treated? How are decisions made? How are employees valued? I had one person, a woman that I interviewed, and she said that when she interviewed at a company, she interviewed with a bunch of several women, but they were all from HR. And so she asked, she said, within my function that I'm interviewing for, what is the, I would like to understand the gender breakout and the diversity breakout. And I would like to talk to somebody within my function who looks like me. And I remember thinking, wow, that's spot on.
Yeah.
So
maybe,
you've
mentioned a couple times about the people that you interviewed, and I've noticed the pronoun she and her. Did you see a gender difference between the people that you were most of the people you interviewed women?
You know, the breakdown in the numbers with the Workplace Bullying Institute is about 70% of targets are identify as female. And then 30% identify as male. There is not much research on non-binary at this point. That said, so in my book, so to answer your question, I interviewed men, women, and non-binary. And in the book, there are examples that I pulled out from those interviews. And some of those are composites that I sort of took some liberties with to make some points. But the workplace bullying is, it is equal opportunity. It is happening to everyone. And I did find it interesting that men reached out on a higher percentage to me when I would post on LinkedIn than women.
Really?
Men wanted to tell their story as well. So there's this, you know, element of shame as a man who has been bullied. How could I, I'm a man, how could I be bullied? And so there's this sort of, additional layer that they seem to be, fighting through or, reconciling.
Wow.
Interesting.
And bullies themselves, is there a breakdown across gender or non-gender for bullies themselves that you've seen?
Yeah, so I think it's 60% are men, and their target of choice are women, and then 40% are women, and their target of choice are women as well.
Wow!
Oh, wow!
So women are are sort of taking the brunt of bullying in the workplace. I would also say that those numbers come from those who report. And so if men are less likely to report, the numbers will skew. So I think, you know, with any of the stats that we read, there's context to all of this. It's not a hard and fast. But with women, you know, when you have scarcity and sexism in the workplace, just by virtue of the math, women will experience workplace bullying more than men.
Ah, and they're already getting paid less, so that's just another cherry on top.
A lot of places they certainly are. Yeah.
Damn.
It was, it's very much a, something that we're all experiencing. And I think just being sensitive to that, is really, really important.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for giving us the language that we can start using and for our listeners and for writing such a tremendous book.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the discussion, and invite me back anytime.
Of course.
Thanks, Megan. This has been so fun and fascinating and educational. Thank you so much for being here today. Fellow humans, Megan's book is called Walk Away to Win and is a must read for anyone who wants to educate themselves about workplace bullying. This book is a life raft, both for the bullied and, as we talked about, for the bullies themselves. We at Uncharted Living believe in growth, that you can change for the better. And Megan has written this book not to condemn people, but to educate us all and promote positive change in the workplace. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you so much for spending another week with us. Follow us at Uncharted Living Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And please like and share this episode with your favorite fellow human. Uncharted.